topic for the evening is multicultural strategies in the church. What's next? So what we'd like to do is think a little bit about some strategies that we have adopted specifically in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and then do some thinking about how we might continue in the future. I'll just say a few words about forums at Holden. We will not be attempting to reach a conclusion at the end of this forum. Those of you who are real orderly, systematic people that like to say, well, this is what the group decided, you probably will be frustrated at the end of this evening. The idea is to begin the discussion and to share our ideas that are present here, and not to attempt to force the group to come to some consensus together. We do encourage you all to share your views openly and freely, but also please respectfully, so that everyone will feel free to share. What we'd like to do is to show a brief video first. This video was produced in 1988, and many of the scenes are from a regional multicultural gathering that some of us attended. As you're watching this, you might think about questions that you yourself might have, and also to think whether or not you feel this is still a current view on multicultural strategies, or if you think something else might be a new direction. And then after the video, Ted has agreed to share some of his thinking, and then we'll open this up to discussion in general. Okay, we'll start.
We are the whitest church in America. When one looks at our church, one finds that we just don't measure up to the American society. Against these statistics, we have been weighted in the scales and found one. The statistics find the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America currently to be the one major denomination which is the least reflective of America's ethnic, language, and racial diversity. Our congregation is a typical suburban church of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. We are predominantly a white congregation. However, we do have a few members of other races and nationalities. Our congregation also has attempted to reach out to the community by providing our worship space for a Korean congregation that meets on Sunday afternoons. We realize that we need to continue to strive for the goal of reaching out to others in the community to further draw all people into the family of God. At St. Mark's, we have a variety of persons that have become a part of our family. When I first came to St. Mark's, it was essentially all-white congregation, but today, after nearly 11 years of ministry here, St. Mark's is much like the children's song, red and yellow, black and white, all are precious in His sight. And that is indeed the characteristic trait of St. Mark's congregation. We have a variety of people and we are all one family.
The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America is engaged in a major missional direction, a direction that is unprecedented in North American Protestantism. No other so-called mainline denomination has ever tried anything so dramatic and bold as the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America is trying. And by the way, I usually say the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America because I found that people will say ELCA, and that's not so bad. But then they say ELCA. And as far as we've come, we're not going to name this church anything that sounds like a German or Scandinavian young woman. But a church intends that all of us will be involved in all of the decision-making in this church. And secondly, to become a growing church, which includes membership which is at least 10% Asian, Black, Hispanic, and Native American, and therefore more nearly reflective of the ethnic, language, and racial diversity existent within its territorial boundaries. We believe that the Christian faith, and therefore the Christian church, by its very nature is inclusive. In the very beginning of the Constitution, in the statement of purpose, it says the church exists both as an inclusive fellowship and as local congregations gathered for worship. And it's important to remember there, the word inclusive doesn't refer to race, ethnicity, or language. It is the very nature of the church to be inclusive.
We are all children of one God. And as children of one God, I believe, no matter how different we are, it is still possible for us to get together under one roof and live in one house. That is my message to you, and that is my challenge. If we truly are children of one God, let us work towards the day where we can live together under one roof in peace.
Christ loves and embraces all people, and as a Christian person, I would like to learn to love all people, and my hope for inclusivity is that all people would learn to love one another in the true spirit of Christ.
I think the most important thing is to stop looking at colors and realize that we are dealing with human beings.
I think we need to be intentional about fulfilling our mission of being inclusive in the new ELCA.
Inclusivity for Central Lutheran Church has been started out as sponsorship of refugees from Southeast Asia. But it's been more than that. It means people worshiping with us. It means baptisms. It means being a much larger fellowship than just Scandinavians or Northern Europeans. It means to be the people who live in this community, embracing them, celebrating the diversity of gifts that God has given us here. Inclusivity for us is not just a word. It's the people that we worship with, it's the people that we work with, and now it's even having James working with us on a regular basis.
Inclusiveness means total involvement by the church. That means total inclusiveness of all people.
I believe that Region 1 of the ELCA needs to have this very important component of multicultural ministry. It is also in a very selfish way coming together to celebrate with other persons of color and primary language other than English, to celebrate the gospel of Jesus Christ and to throw a big hug around Region 1.
Our region is very large. It stretches all the way from the borders of North Dakota to the borders of Soviet Russia. We include 5 states, the states of Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana. The beautiful thing about having an area so large as the one that we have is that it includes so many people who are so diverse.
Reflecting.
I'm Dalvin Irby from Portland, Oregon.
My name is Kathleen Fleury, and I'm a member of the Little Shell Band of Chippewa Indians in Montana. This is my son, James Benjamin, who's one of the newest Indian Lutheran members.
Mucho gusto. Encantado de saludarles.
This is Nguyen Dương, Nguyen Gia Vinh Cường, Nguyen Phan Hoàng, and myself, Joseph Dove.
My name is Mary Miller. I'm from Nome, Alaska.
Ni hao ma.
People are certainly the most precious thing that we have to offer this new church of ours. We challenge you, we welcome you to be a part of the old cultural ministry of your synod and of your region.
Take hope in being a Lutheran and in being a part of the ELCA. Don't be ashamed of that, we pray. Pray that God will empower us, especially as Asian, Black, Hispanic, and Native American peoples, to take a rightful place in the ministry of this church. We are God's mission impossible force, and we can achieve the impossible dream only when God sounds the trumpet. And if God should be for us, who shall stand against God's elect, huh? Pray without ceasing that God, who sent Jesus Christ, his only son, God's only son, to this low ground of prejudice, sin, racial discrimination, and sorrow. so that all who believe in him do not perish, but have everlasting life. We believe that this same God who heard Elijah pray in the cleft of the mountain, who heard Paul and Silas cry out in jail, who saw three Hebrew children, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and a fiery furnace, and saw them out, we believe that same God, if we pray to that God without ceasing, can make possible that which seems impossible. We pray that that God can turn some dark today into bright tomorrow. Sam, you knew that already, but I just had to say it.
Come join us.
Yes, he will. Will he make a way for me? And he made a way for you. I know the Lord will make a way. Yes, he will. Will he make a way for my mother?
One is the last voice that you heard singing. You know, most people don't roll the video through the whole credits, but I always do on that one because that's Ruby Williams singing. And she's going to be here on Friday, so we're hoping she'll do some more singing when she's here. Several other people that were visible in the video are coming later in the week. James Dovin is one, and so we're looking forward to all those folks being here soon. And we're really glad to have Ted here. Ted is the director for Multicultural Ministries for Region 1, and I'd like to hear how you share with us now.
Okay, I think the best part of that film, I like to start saying, right off, any questions? Any questions, you know? That film says so much, what more is there to be said other than what we can say right here for ourselves and to one another? But you know, the best part of that film is one of the very last scenes that says, come join us.
Yeah.
Come join us. And I think that's a very important statement because it's an us statement. It's not you guys can come over here and join us or you gals or whatever. I use all these terms because the people are using those kind of terms and those are sort of derogatory terms to be used. But come join us. How many... I asked this question. I've been in this job for about 2 years now, Nancy. And things are really beginning to open up and for me to become more exposed to people. I try to get around to many congregations. In the 2 years, I think I've gotten around to at least 30 congregations. First, nose-to-nose basis. We oftentimes meet in councils and clusters and all kind of committees. And the committees do a fine job, but sometimes the words don't get down to the congregation, and they haven't filtered down yet. So I ask the questions of the congregations when I attend those congregations. Do you know what the plans, do you have an idea what the plans of the ELCA are? Do you all know right now what the ELCA is trying to do? No. How many? Okay, let's do it today. How many know?
In terms of inclusiveness, is that what you mean? Or just in general?
That's what this class is about.
Okay.
Multicultural ministry.
Yeah. Okay.
One, two, three, four. Okay. Okay. How many don't know what the church is trying to do in multicultural areas? Ah, so you must then have some questions then. I think you started to say something.
Yeah, I raised my hand both times. I know when I don't. One of my questions is, it's easy to talk the talk. The question is, are we walking the walk? Where are we putting the bucks?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to end it with that, but since you started off with that.
I tried to get to the point.
But that is right. You put your money where your mouth is. Okay, you're in a church that says, okay, we want to include everybody. We are or maybe I can say in my opinion, that we should be a church in mission to everybody, to all the colors. And this is what the church has joined to do, professes to do. They say they have set a quota that says at least 10% of the people should be in multicultural folks by the year, within 10 years. At least, that's a quota. The whole world has stopped dealing with quotas, but we have picked up a quota. That gives us an idea of where to go, but it doesn't stop us. Now, some folks may say that, raise your hand, we don't have any of those kind of folks in our area. How many would say that? We don't have enough of those people in our area. You all have Asians, African Americans, and so forth. You all have many of those you can pick from?
Or persons from other underrepresented groups, such as homosexuals.
I'm not dealing, let me qualify, let me qualify who I am. You can add that. Let me qualify who I am and what my charter is. It's called Director for Multicultural Ministries. I am dealing in the cultures of Asians, Africans, Native Americans, Hispanics, and other folks whose primary language is not English. I am not talking about the subcultures that go along with this. That's not my charter. That doesn't mean that they're excluded, but that's not my charter. So when you add homosexuals and homeless and all these people, I'm not talking about that. But the church is dealing with that. But I have to let you know where what my charter is. Now, and other folks, but we need to know, the question on the floor at this time is, what is the church trying to do? And most people here don't know what the church is doing. You have a church that says, how many people know about the Constitution? How many people have read the Constitution of the church? This almost the same number have read the Constitution of the church. But let me read something from the Constitution of the church that I picked out as far as my job is concerned. And you add in the others, I'm just trying to let you know where I'm coming from. Okay.
Just under the auspices of inclusivity.
Okay.
I wouldn't want to be exclusive within inclusivity.
Yeah. It's going to be one of those days. We're going to play with the word here and confuse things. And it's April 1987. I want to read this to you so I get all the words down here. Constituting Convention, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America sets specific inclusivity goals. Paragraph 4.02. To participate in God's mission, this church shall carry out Christ's great commission by reaching out to all people to bring them to faith in Christ. See, advocate dignity and justice for all people. Some of this is capitalized now. Nurture its members in the Word of God so as to grow in faith and hope and love. Join with other Christians in prayer and action to express and preserve the unity which the Holy Spirit gives. Paragraph 4.03. I'm reading this to you because you haven't read the Constitution. And this might help you to know what the church is doing. I think this is a salient point. To fulfill these purposes, this church will, 1. Study social issues and trends, work to discover the causes of oppression and injustice, and develop programs of ministry and advocacy to further human dignity, freedom, justice, and peace in the world. Paragraph 5.01. This church recognizes that all power and authority in the church belongs to the Lord Jesus Christ, its head. Therefore, and has a lot of paragraphs here that you can go back and check these later, except as otherwise provided, at least 60% of the members of their assemblies, councils, committees, boards, and other organizations, organizational units, shall be laypersons, that as nearly as possible, 50% of the laypersons or lay members of their assemblies, etc., shall be female, and 50% shall be male, and that where possible, the representation of ordained ministers shall be both male and female. Each synod shall establish processes that will enable it to reach a minimum goal that 10% of the membership of its assemblies, etc., 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 be persons of color and or persons whose primary language is other than English. Paragraph 501-87. Within 10 years, its membership shall include at least 10% people of color and or primary language other than English. paragraph 501B87, by the time of its second assembly, each synod shall establish a plan to attain this goal within 10 years. So, and here's something, a quote from her, Bishop Chilstrom. We need to move from discussion to action. Then let's get going together. Now, does that give you an idea of what the church is striving to do? Are we? How many people are more better informed of what the church is trying to do? Based on this constitution. Now, what you think you may see or what you see may be something else to be dealt with. But that is what the church is trying to do. It's trying to bring in the people that are either on the fringes or not included or people that feel excluded. And they want those people to be a part of the governing bodies of the church, the bishops, the ministers, all the people, the councils that make up the church. In places like in Philadelphia, I've not seen a council at work, but I suspect that there's lots of multicultural representation on those councils. In places like Minnesota, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I can talk about out here in the West where we are. On councils and so forth, there is not very much representation, even though we have a number of people that can be selected. But it's up to the folks that are in the congregations, that's why these words need to get to the congregations, to reach into the congregations and intentionally bring out those folks and to help those folks want to be a part of the council. Nancy talked about, expressed some of my feelings. I guess I'm into it already. I'm not sure. But anyway, it sort of gets mixed together after these years. And I know Nancy has gone through a lot. But one of the things, I don't know if you were in the program earlier with Kelly Chapman, Pastor Chapman, but one of the things that he looked at was who's here. This is a rainbow week, folks. This is a rainbow week. Who's here for the rainbow? Nicole, I'm here, you know, and maybe some more people are coming in and out. But there's not a great rainbow here. Last time I was here, the guy went up to the board and said, I want somebody to tell me the color of a rainbow. I'm going to draw a rainbow on this board. Do you see it? Do you see it? Okay? You don't see it. The point that I'm trying to make, one of the points I'm trying to make here in this discussion, and I want you to ask me all kinds of questions, please feel free to, anything, is that we need to reach out intentionally and invite those people, almost take them by the hand, those folks that are not here, that feel uncomfortable, even when they are invited, because they have been excluded for so long that they feel that they're not really invited. My attitude about what I do, and I love what I do, some people may call it a job, I call it a blessing. I want to thank Nancy and all the committee, whoever hired me for this, because it is a blessing. I represent 5 groups of people, overall groups, and in alphabetical order, okay? The African-American, before they started saying African-American, it used to be black and we came second, but now it's African-American, so now we're first.
Moving on up.
Identity, we discussed that today. Asian-Americans, Hispanic, Native Americans, and white Americans. And all of those groups, that's not my charter, but that's what I feel, representing all of us. I represent all of us. I have to tell you a funny thing that happens to me sometimes. As we get into discussions, I become the different people that I represent. If I happen to be in a black community or a black discussion and they're really lambasting the Asian folks, I become Asian. I don't do that consciously, just, man, I'm in there. If they're against those folks, they're talking about my people, and I get in there the best I can. And then sometime, when you hear me say, we have to, that's when I'm in my white community. I mean, I keep this as best I can, I hold on to it, you know. But I become the people that I represent, and so I represent all of us. When I talk for a little while like that, I like to sort of stop and say, are there any questions, and we can go on. Any questions, please?
Well, when you read the Constitution to us, Ted, one of the things that strikes me is that
There are goals in there about leadership, and there are goals in there about membership. And we can't have leadership from those communities if we don't have membership from those communities. You know, we can't, because people aren't there, they can't be leaders. And do you think that we need different strategies for those two things to increase the membership of the church from these four communities, and a different set of strategies to raise up leadership from those communities?
No, I think first of all, the number one strategy is to reach out to all people, begin to do that. And it doesn't have to be some gigantic magical thing. You know, sometimes people are so fearful of one another, they don't even say hello to a person or see them on the street. So I think one of the easiest things you can do, I don't know about your communities, but somewhere along the line, you're going to run into somebody that's unlike yourself. Since they're unlike yourself, you might be in a shopping area. I practice this when I started in Germany. But you might be in a shopping center, and you don't know what to say to that person. You don't know what they want or who they are. You might just practice saying, hi, hello, how you doing? Just practice a little step like that. You don't climb big ladders up to the roof. You might just say hello to somebody. Hello, how are you? You might practice. Then that, you don't get into a big conversation. At the checkout counter, just say hello to somebody that's different than yourself. Get in the practice, putting one foot in front of the other. It just might happen that that conversation might turn into something more. And that might be the person looking for a salvific force, which would be you. And you can invite them to your church. You know, you can do that. So, first of all, feeling free with yourself that we can reach out. Now I've become the white person. That we can reach out to the other community. I think that's important. Please.
One of the things I do is I'm active in Association for Retarded Citizens. And at a national convention, I was talking with a group of leaders about the fact that it's even more WASP than the Lutheran Church. And what we need to do is get people as members, but one way to do that is to bring people into leadership roles. And I almost went nuts in a meeting because they were telling me the 14 reasons why a person has to go through that chairs to get to a position of leadership. And one of the things that I heard between the lines there is that the church is going to be proactive in eliminating those chairs, because to draw people in who aren't like me, I think we need to have people in leadership roles and prominent leadership roles to show that they're real about it and that we're not only talking it, we're walking it.
That's right. I think that's a very important comment, talking and walking.
I'm the moderator. Yes. You're the presenter.
Yeah.
Yes.
But let me respond to something too,
Miss Moderator.
Let me respond to something.
Okay.
Go for it. Thank you, Miss Moderator. I appreciate that.
We could get in a fight here. This would be
terrific panel. The bringing people into leadership roles is another way to do that. You see, you think of bringing people into a leadership role, but you also have to go into their communities and find out what their issues are. And then you get into their lifestyles and you bring leadership out of their lifestyle, not try to fit them into your, what might be, not when I say you, that's a rhetorical you, you understand that, into your what you think the leadership roles are for you or how you see it, please.
Yes.
I have a strategy question. One of the problems that we face, we are, the congregation that I'm responsible for, is the second largest in the Oregon Synod. And because of that, we provide a mass, what I consider a fairly high level of services in the community for people, for folks in general. Into those services come a high number of Hispanics in terms of our feeding programs that we have, both the groceries and the daily food stuff. We have a high number of Asians involved in our daycare facility. We have various folks coming through the services that we provide, and we recognize that the invitation that we have to extend, that welcome, that join us kind of thing, is there. But what frustrates us is that yes, they're willing to receive the services and participate in those services, but not be with us in our service, worship service. And it's a real frustration for that, because we are so white in our community. because we are also so structured in terms of the way that we worship, and narrow because of that, we don't, they wouldn't feel welcome if they walked in the door because of that. How do we make that kind of shift, the strategy shift from services provided to making that welcome reasonable and at the same time retain the 1,500 people that are members already?
Yeah,
Before you respond to that, let's see if there's anybody else that wants to comment on this issue. Because I'm sure this gets asked of you a lot, Ted, but maybe someone else has something that they want to say at this point.
I do.
Sure.
Maybe this is simplistic, but I've been an elementary school teacher for a long time. And I think about language and what people perceive when they hear and whether they can read or not read and all of those things, or read the English language. And then I read somewhere about a Lutheran pastor who did something rather dramatic, and that was he began having a very simple service on Sunday morning, a quote generic service, if you will. When you go to some of these non-denominational churches, what do? They have some praise singing first, then they open with a prayer, they have a sermon. What else? I mean, the very simple, basic things that we do in simple language. And that if we want to have a liturgical service, if for those people that enjoy that, then have that at a different time other than Sunday morning. That sounds pretty drastic, doesn't it?
I think Michael's right in the asking for the order. It's in sales. You have to ask for the order to get the sale most of the time. And the way we as Lutherans ask for the order is, you know, you want to buy this, and by the way, you have to use this particular credit card. Cash isn't good enough. We make it difficult. Our liturgy becomes a stumbling block.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Any other comments about this? Yes.
I have just a question. I went to St. Olaf College, and I have a friend who's Black, and at St. Olaf, I think in my graduating class, there must have been about 10 Black students. If that, and he said if he had it to do over again, he would not go to St. Olaf, because not because people were not friendly or did not accept him, but just he never felt comfortable, he never made a very good friend, because he felt like he was culturally so different. And I just wonder how you open that up, and how you, the same question, how, when it's already so white and there isn't that diversity, how do you create that diversity?
Did anybody else want to say anything before we let Ted answer this one?
Well, I think one important thing to think about is what we mean by diversity. I'm a historian, and one of the things I've been working on recently are some case studies of congregations. Two of them are Roman Catholic parishes, one in Chicago and one in San Francisco, both of which developed out of European immigrant groups. The San Francisco one was initially an Irish congregation. And as the population in the neighborhood changed, in some ways those became multicultural parishes, but they became but it's almost a misnomer, because what they became was three parishes in one building, right? And so there was a Spanish-speaking service at one time, and there was Filipino at another time, and there was English at another time. But that's a kind of multiculturality.
Yeah.
And the Lutherans have gone through that in one stage already, because we started with immigrant groups, and then we learned to speak English. And for many years in many congregations, there were two congregations, right? And then what happens is that the immigrant, the people who were immigrants died, right? That's a strategy. You can just wait for all the people who are there to die. It's kind of slow.
We could speed it up.
But what I want to get at here is that, that those are two different ways of thinking about multicultural. One is simultaneously having three congregations in the same place, but that don't really interact. And another is a kind of succession where you lose one and you become another. But that's not what I hear in those goals. What I hear in those goals is a kind of multiculturality where we're all together. And I think that's much more difficult. So I'm not going to answer your questions, but only to say, let's think about what it is we're asking for when we ask for a multicultural church.
We need to, like you say, we need to examine the music. We need to see the music, for instance, that invite people in. We need to simplify the service. I go to a Bethel Chinese church in Seattle, and when I go there, I hear the music. It's a very simple service. I hear the service in three languages, Mandarin, Cantonese, and English. Because of the diversity of that church within the Asian community itself, at that church, the pastor speaks in Cantonese. Immediately on his shoulder stands another person. He speaks in Mandarin. And then I sit with earphones on, and someone is interpreting for me in English. But it's a very simple service, and it has to be simple, easy, simplistic. I don't know which word to say. Not simplistic is the best word, I guess. Because the people coming to the church are new Christians. They're older, some are younger, but they speak these languages, and they can't get too heavy into the theological business. And so the pastor has to give a very simple service, and it works well. I took my wife, I got to tell you a little joke here. It was kind of funny. I walk into the Chinese church, and my wife said, "Where shall we sit?" With three people. I said, "Well, let's just sit right in the middle." Anytime I go anyplace new, I sit right in the middle. And so I sat in the middle of the church, and the music started singing and so forth. And I could read the music, not the words, but the music, somewhat. I get the idea of the tune. And so I was sitting there. All of a sudden, someone tapped me on the shoulder. I was sitting really in the middle, and someone looked in and beckoned out. I said, "Oh no, not here too."
Sit in the back of the bus.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But what it was, listen to this. Without them expecting us, they were prepared for people to come in. You hear the word, they were prepared for people to come in that didn't speak the languages. So they set us in the back pew, and in the back pew, they had earphones for us to use. So they were ready in a very simple service. So we examine, for instance, let's say the Hispanic. The Hispanic likes to sing to a guitar. They may not like to sing to a big, gigantic organ that drowns out all the voices. All you can hear is the organ, you know. That may be a thing to examine. The reaching out in service is that I will go to eat whoever feeds me, I will go to eat because I have a family, I have to feed them. But after the feeding is over, then I do leave because I may not feel very welcome. People may look at me funny. So, folks, one thing I don't want to happen out of here is that anybody goes away with a guilt trip. This is not a guilt trip. We're talking about family, getting to know who we are. Nobody should feel any guilt about anything we're talking about, but family. How can we make our family better? The moderator will. I can't, I'm not allowed.
Moderator. The question that I put to Michael is the people that are there providing this food under the umbrella of your congregation, what language are they speaking?
See, originally, for the most part, I mean, we're a soup kitchen that in the first part of June is serving 200 people in a day, and then at lunch. And so what they did is they took classes in Spanish because we increased our...
Well, suppose you had a guitar...
A mariachi band
at the soup kitchen.
And it might work.
Wouldn't that blow their mind?
But it's part of that was the group learned to speak Spanish and took classes for about 6 to 8 weeks to learn the basics. Mm-hmm. Found out that the difficulty is most of these people don't speak Spanish. They speak their local Indian dialect
here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. And that it was almost more of an offense to them to assume that they all spoke Spanish because they were from Latin America. And so we also the fact that we were real intentional about putting up signs in Spanish, and problem is they don't read. And so therefore, whether you put it in English or Spanish, both are an offense. We have people on staff that speak Spanish so that we can facilitate that. But the difficulty on an ongoing basis is that we have lots of good intention, and we really do make the effort. And the difficulty is that we are so ignorant of the realities until after the fact, after we have brought that offense up, that we continue to try, and the meal is still good, and it's served on the table hot with that smile. But the difficulty is the communication we have is it is trying to make it family, and so far there's still that separation.
There'd be lots of faith, but we have to keep trying it.
Somebody there is some. Kelly.
Now, I can't speak for Michael's situation, but I have two experiences. One is that in working in the community, and when people say to you, what church do you go to? And wanting to come to my church, I always hesitate to tell them where it is, because I know that when they come in, they're not going to experience that affirming relationship that they assume based on the relationship that is established in the community. When they experience our liturgy, I know that they're not going to get what they expect when they come to my church. So that's one experience. The other experience is, and I think I can speak for my wife as well, when we go out to churches, we know churches where they may be, you know, overwhelmingly European, but there's a spirit of welcome, of invitation there that transcends the worship. And the signs of welcome are integrated into the worship. So it isn't an issue of how many white faces are there. It's a matter of people know. And there's a saying that where you're coming from speaks so loudly I can hardly hear words you're saying. And as a person of color, you can clearly tell. We can be in that church one time and know that, you know, people from the street can walk in there and feel the same.
I have been in 30 or more congregations, I forget the count now, but I've never felt, most of the time, 99.9% of the time, I've always felt welcomed, and I felt relaxed. I was happy to be there. I felt that I was speaking to family. I could joke and talk with them about that kind of sense of the time. I've really felt good. One person from the multicultural community in a congregation, I don't know what it would be like if 50 people walked in. I don't know what that would be like. So that's important. Another thing, another strategy.
If you walking away in the congregation, it's going to be painting, but we'll take
it. The other part is, I think that we ought to be intentional in the sense that if there's nobody in our congregation, nobody in the neighborhood, nobody to pick from, they just are not around, that we still study the issues. We still study about those folks. So when our children leave, they won't feel so removed from it. So we're still aware, so that if somebody's, as the country begins to change, I think about 2020, it's going to be 50-50% of the different types of people. 50 white, 50 all the other colors. And they're going to be moving to your neighborhoods. Get ready now rather than rush the issue when you, oh, one's walking through the door and happen to be Lutheran. Excuse me, Miss Moderator. You know what I like? Listen to this. Just suppose we have many missionaries going to Africa. Just suppose that the Africans say, well, we're going to make an exodus to our Lutheran brothers and sisters in America, in the United States of America in particular, and that they show up in groups of 50 and 100 in your congregation. What about that? But on the other hand, also, I want to say, in addition to that, it's important that you not think about people coming from over there in Africa, but the people next door to you or pretty in pretty close proximity. They kind of get left out of the information, out of the equation.
Please. I was just curious as to your thoughts about how much a barrier social class or education might be to people coming into the Lutheran Church. I sort of the feeling we're sort of upper middle class, and that even in our community, if you were lower class, white or black, you might not feel welcome coming into the Lutheran
Church. You said lower class?
Yes, I did.
Did you say lower class?
Yes, I did.
Now you're smiling about that. Why are you smiling about that?
You're going to zing me, that's why.
Zing you, you got that right. Zinged you. Well, we're not, some of the people that you meet around here, see what kind of class you think they are, you know. You only have one or two, maybe five people of color here. I don't like that word, but it's describing everything. But you have these people here. See what kind of class you think they are. We're not talking about lower class folks. We're talking about some very astute people. The people that you saw on the television here, those aren't lower class folks. They're all over the country. But they're also people of less experience, of less opportunity, if that's what you mean by lower class, of less opportunity. They will also be coming. But they come like any other person of less opportunity. Only they have to be highly identified by the skin color or the features or something, or homeless, or various kind of sexualities. So lower class. But who did Jesus deal with?
Oh,
you're
right.
There's something Ben was commenting over here.
I thought, I think his point was, it's much more likely that people of a lower class will come to our congregation than people of color. I mean, in Winona, there probably aren't more than 25 people that way.
I don't know.
It would be, it's much more likely that someone of a working class background would come and may not feel welcome in that situation.
I was speaking with a black man. I use the term black and African American interchangeably. If we want to discuss definition of the term, we can do that, and we depend on whether it's Thursday or Friday and what we use. But so I use the term interchangeably because they do have different kind of connotations. But I was speaking to a black man recently, and he said, "What church do you go to?" Some way or another, we got into the conversation. I said, "I'm Lutheran." He says, "You know, I want to visit your church." I said, "What church do you go to?" He said, "I'm Baptist." I said, "You're Baptist. You want to go to Lutheran church?" He said, "Yeah, he didn't like the Baptist church."
And he's black.
So he means, so all blacks aren't Baptists, but the point, see what I'm saying? Yeah. But see what I'm saying? This is the man that wants to change our church. Folks, we have, in case you didn't know it, one of the best theological setups in the church. There is a book I recommend that you all read if you haven't read it. I'm sure your children read it. They've used it for confirmation class. It's called Baptized We Live. Baptized We Live. Baptized We Live. In Africa, you say things three times. Make sure they said it, you know. Written by Dan Erlinger. Goes to PLU. He's a professor at PLU, I mean. This tells the story of who we are. When you look at that document again to tell the story of who we are as Lutherans, we have a very good situation going. We can help a lot of people, bring a lot of people to salvation if we just reach out and do what we profess.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned our theology because that's the basis of us being Lutherans, is our theology, our confessions. The liturgy is not the basis. The liturgy is not set in concrete. That's not the basis of being a Lutheran. If you look at our youth, you look at people who are entering into the church, that our liturgy is based on a tradition, and it's very difficult for the church to become multicultural using that liturgy.
Right.
And so what I believe, if we're going to be serious about this, we have to look at, is the liturgy serving the people and what its objective is, to worship and praise God? So, I mean, that's the bottom line. And I think that Michael's point is that so often the battle lines are over our liturgical practices, not our theology.
Yeah.
Right.
And I've been in many churches, east and west, and if you could see how many different ways we have the liturgy of the service going, you'd be surprised. So we're not changing the foundations. Maybe the processes a little bit. But the foundation is still there. So don't be afraid of that, because that's not happening.
To put it a little different terminology, we have an excellent product here. We're afraid to sell it. We may need to repackage it a little bit, but it's an excellent product. I mean, really, we're afraid to sell it.
I'm going to try something. Ms. Moderator, may I try something?
I think you probably will.
Any odds on this?
Oh, we have hands.
Scott has his hand up. Oh, now you'll defer to Scott.
Oh, go ahead. I'm in trouble now.
Ted, as I look around the country of churches, even the, you know, churches that are growing by leaps and bounds, maybe even more so of those, or even the, amongst our Lutheran family, the churches that seem to be really vigorous, I see some churches that are multiracial, but I don't see many churches that are multicultural. And I really wonder if we can do that. I see us being able to, you know, if we get more aggressive, we could become much more multiracial. But it looks to me, when I look at these congregations, whatever the color of folk are in them, they all seem to me like they're relating pretty much to the same culture. And I'm just curious what you think about that. I mean, is it really possible for Lutheran churches to be multicultural? I think it's really possible for us to be multiracial, but I see no questions whether we're just kidding ourselves about whether we can really become or want to become multicultural.
Well, let's see. We have Germans, Swedes, Norwegians.
Yeah, but they're all today part of the same culture.
Are they?
Yeah, many
of them. Are they part of the same culture?
They aren't, if we wouldn't lump them together as one group and call them whites.
Well, they call themselves white. Okay. When you say we, you were right.
Yeah, right.
Okay, they call themselves white. But are that the same culture? Sure. All those?
Sure.
Well, I think a good question you ask is, are we willing? I once belonged to a multicultural congregation before I moved to Portland, which I see the long ways coming. But this church started out as a mission congregation, and there were people from varying economic levels, as well as different races. And, you know, the liturgy incorporated cultures from each of us. I mean, we developed our own song book of songs that were from the cultures of the people who were represented there. Basically, it was black and white, but we would have refugees that would come in once in a while, but may not remain there. I mean, I think your point is good, but I think the real question is, are we willing? And I think it is possible. I've seen it happen. I was a part of it, and it was genuine. And it can happen unless people do some of the things that we're talking about in terms of giving, making the liturgy different to where it reflects the cultures of the other people. And it takes a willingness and openness to do that. So I think the real issue is,
I'm going to ask you to build on this a little bit, Cheryl, because I think it's a really important point. Now, who is it that developed the liturgy in this multicultural congregation that you're talking about?
The members.
You didn't write away to some publishing house and say, hey, you know, give us what we should do.
No,
you didn't
say, for example,
look to the church and say, tell us what to do.
No, the way we did it was to suggest that members come to this. There was a specific time set every so many years. We probably revise it every 2 or 3 years. When I came there, they were suggesting that people bring songs that they would like to have in our hymnal. It was called the Little Red Hymnal, and it was one with Xerox pages where I took songs from my Baptist hymnal. Other people that had songs that were true and dear to their heart would come to this meeting, and we would present this and have the pianists play the songs out, and we would introduce them to the congregation on certain Sundays that it seemed unfamiliar. So everybody was bringing in songs that were meaningful to them. And then the liturgy, we would write our own style and our own liturgy, and we would incorporate and always change it. Once in a while, we would go to the traditional one so that we wouldn't feel foreign when we went to other Lutheran churches. And we wouldn't feel as if we didn't know the order to go in. But most things were developed right there in the church, just from, you know, grassroots, from having people attend sessions where we pull all that together.
First of all, do a study about what it is that all people of X culture like to do, and then you built it according to that. But you built it from the people who were present.
Right.
Right. I think that the question about multicultural and multiracial, those are important questions, and they have to do with terminologies. And we like, at Lutheran, like to analyze things so we forget what we're analyzing. And but we should remember the intent of what we're talking about. Not so much the words, the intent of what it is we're trying to do to reach out to people of all communities. I think that's the most important part. There's some question that will definitely go unanswered. You can't,
I'm going to really break the rule about moderators, because moderators aren't supposed to talk.
You didn't answer my first question anyway. Where are the bucks going? Will you get to that?
Okay.
So, but what?
Just to follow up a little bit more on what Cheryl was talking about, the key element that I think is in there is that the leadership for that congregation to take a multicultural route came from those people. It wasn't that folks said, well, here's this neighborhood out here and we ought to figure out how to reach out to them. But in fact, the people who were being reached out to were part of the reaching out process. And I think if we're going to attempt to develop a strategy for including some people, the people who we're attempting to include have to be part of the developing part of the strategy.
In the ground, whenever you set your ground, when you set any plans to do anything, if you have people, best possible, include those folks in the planning status. We do a lot of planning, then we ask people, what do you think about this? Then it's too late. Then the person, I don't think anything about it. Oh, yes, okay. But then they don't follow through on it. So in the planning. Folks, a simple thing, we should be reaching out. We're wonderful people. We seem to forget that. We have a wonderful story to tell. We don't tell it. I can ask a person, I say, I'm Lutheran. They say, what's that? You know, we don't need that. We could work in a community like crazy, but people don't know we exist. So we need to tell our stories, let people know that we're here, that we want to be helpful, that we want to be sharing, not helping, but sharing, sharing. That would be the name of the game, I think.
We have 2 minutes left, so you should do the concluding remarks and try to include the answer to his question.
Is there a question over there? A statement more than anything. You talk about the Bucks, where they're at, and coordination. The ELCA has a process that Nancy and I've gotten involved in with the Division of Congregational Life that really promotes inclusiveness and a just and sustainable society.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a staff of 4 or 5, now they're down to a half-time person. But the profound process that deals with what we're talking about. We call ourselves family, talk about communication and planning. When you have a family, you involve everybody in discussion. You just don't have the father anymore, as the culture I come from used to. You know, you involve everybody. And that process is in the ELCA. It worked on for 9, 10, 11 years before the ELCA was formed, ALC and LCA. And the Bucks are limited because of the reasons you know, but it's there.
Including statement, I have a slight problem, so I'll make it quickly. Put one foot in front of the other. Excuse me, quickly.
Oh! I thought that was your strategy.
No.
Put one foot in front of the other.
Sure. If you wanted to end in a question, I got one.
Sure.
A couple decades ago, a science started developing called the science of church growth, studying how churches grow and how to make churches grow, basically out of Southern California, basically not in the mainstream church tradition. But mainstream churches have been trying, you know, approaching it, trying to incorporate to some extent because they realized that these other traditions were growing, mainstream churches were dying. So they're trying to take what was being discovered seriously. One of the things that came out of that science, that movement, was the opposite of what we've been talking about tonight. If you want to grow, stick to homogeneous units. Basically, the theory of birds of a feather stick together. That multicultural stuff does not attract people. Those churches don't grow. That the greatest growth comes when you find common elements in culture, common societal elements. If they're right, and if ELCA starts declining in numbers as a result of multicultural attempts, what happens?
That might be a real good question to end on. And you know, we can pursue some of these other questions.
I'm not sure that they'll be proven right, but suppose they are right. What happens then?
Well, it's a gospel.
Yeah. I really seriously am going to end us here at 10 o'clock because that's our commitment. But go ahead and feel free to pursue some of this because we obviously haven't concluded this conversation. Thank you again for being here.